Hello and welcome to episode 36 of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tavam and I'm joined as always by my good friend out in the United States, Our Game Magazine's JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Very good.
Excellent.
Good to be back.
Excellent. Well, it's usually you that's talking about the heat over there. I am happy to inform you that it is the hottest day in England in September since 1911. So that is an interesting, boring fact for you to kick off this show. But I thought I'd start boring and get more interesting, because on this show, we're going to cover off very quickly the FAWSL and the NWSL. I've got a little bit of audio with Lucy Bronze after Man City won a big game away at Arsenal. I think it's fair to say one hand is on the title. They are almost there at the home straight. We will cover off the NWSL. As said, there's now only one place available in the playoffs. So, JJ, I'm sure you've got a lot to say about that. But the majority of the show, after we've heard from Jasmina Schweimler giving us a brief update on the Frauen Bundesliga, is going to be dedicated to Heyo Heather O'Reilly. We, of course, mentioned in the previous show that she has announced her international retirement. I was very fortunate to speak to her this week. So we have a good half an hour with Heyo looking back at her US women's national team career. But after this break, we'll kick off with the FAWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So welcome back, JJ. Just the two games in the WSL this past weekend, but two big ones, both absolutely huge. Manchester City travelled to Arsenal. Arsenal needed to win to keep their UEFA Women's Champions League hopes alive. Manchester City probably just needed to avoid defeat to keep their league title hopes alive. City won. It was a narrow 1-0 win, a fortuitous goal, Steph Horton taking a free kick that deflected off of Jane Ross's head, which proved to be the decisive goal. Now, I'm not sure if you saw the highlights or whether you saw the goal, but for me, that confirms City as the title winners.
Yeah, I did see the highlights, and I guess kind of one of those bounces can be kind of the telltale sign of how the season is going, right? You know, you look at it, Steph Horton drills one of her patented free kicks. It also ends up hitting off the back of one of her own teammates' head and then goes into the back of the net. I think that's almost symbolic of how the season has gone for both teams, right? Manchester City has gotten all the bounces to go for their way. Obviously, they've been so solid this entire year, what, scoring 33, 4 to just 3 conceded in 14 matches. I mean, you look at what the spin Manchester City's so-called sister team down in Australia almost putting together the exact same types of results, cruising through the competition, and then they've done the same thing up north as well. And for Arsenal, I mean, you and I are both in agreement that they are well underachieving what they're supposed to be doing. They've got the deepest team. They should be challenging for the title. I'm not going to obviously go ahead and say they should win the title, because that'd be a bit of a slight to City as well as Chelsea. But they just don't get any luck going for them. They've had injuries. They've had some bad early decisions that have gone their way. And now, obviously, when they played decently enough that probably they deserved a draw, and you get one bad stroke of fortune, you know, that's football for you, right?
It's fine margins. It's fine margins. I hosted an event after the game for Arsenal Ladies Supporters Club, and Casey Stoney was the guest speaker at the event. I interviewed her up on stage, and I did ask her about Arsenal's season, if you could sum it up, and she said, not good enough. You know, Casey's always very honest, which is one of the reasons why I always enjoy interviewing her. And she was very, very open that they just haven't been good enough this year. Yes, they've had a few bad decisions here and there. They've had a little bit of bad luck. But then I guess if you looked across the league, so have other teams, and they're not making any excuses. They haven't been good enough. They won the FA Cup. That will be a gold star next to the team. But they want to be in the UEFA Women's Champions League. They want to be fighting for the title like they have been doing so in years gone by. And they've fallen well short this year. And on the flip side, Manchester City, start of the season, all eyes on them, pressure on them with the signings of the likes of Kosovare Asllani, high-profile signings, adding to an already quality team. They've come through it, and it looks like, unless there's a major slip-up, they may well do it undefeated.
Yeah, you know, obviously, all eyes are going to be on that match on the 25th at the Academy Stadium. Chelsea need 3 points, plain and simple. It's right now, if City just get 1 point, then they're through. I'm looking at the table right now. They're on 38 with two matches. Yeah, so if they get a draw out of that, then they're home. So, for Chelsea, you know, we're obviously going to talk about their thrashing that they put on against Reading. They have to win that one, win the balance, and then hope that Birmingham on the 30th of October, again up in Manchester. I mean, you and I talked about the last show. What, City have gotten all the luck in the world in the sense of they're hosting all these key matches on their home ground, plus they're going to get the Continental Cup final on their home ground. I mean, you couldn't have scripted any better for them, but still, Birmingham's a tough team to break down, so Chelsea can win that. You never know. I think still really it might be in the balance if they can pull through and get 3 points there.
Well, certainly the team are not getting carried away, or the coach. I spoke to Nick Cushing after the game on Sunday, and he certainly wasn't willing to commit to anything, and neither was Lucy Bronze. I managed to catch up with her very briefly after the game, and here's what she had to say when I posed the question about the title. Lucy, we've just spoken to your manager. He said, you're not talking about the title in the dressing room yet, but one step closer, one hand arguably on it. How did it feel after today?
Yeah, I think it was really good, you know, especially against a team like Arsenal, who arguably could be there fighting for the title with us as well. I think are one of the best teams in the league as well. So to come away with 3 points away is huge for us, knowing that, you know, we've got two games now that we could win one, and that's the league settled for us.
3 points away from home at Arsenal, and restricted them to very few chances as well. That must have been pleasing from a defensive point of view as well.
Yeah, definitely, especially with Champions League this year. That's something that we've been building on the past few weeks, is, you know, we can all play nice football and keep it, you know, like the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea do, but we need another side to our game, and playing against Arsenal is a good way to kind of get those points out, because they are so good at playing.
I'm sure you're not really bothered about what us media types say in the newspapers and on the telly and on the radio, but they've been talking about Man City as having claimed the title already. I mean, it doesn't look like the pressure's getting to you. It looks like you're just playing a normal game and carrying on as you have been all season.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's what the likes of Liverpool and Chelsea done in previous years. You can't affect anyone else unless you're playing against them. And I think it's important us to take each game as it comes. You know, we've still got the cup final as well, and we've got other things to be focusing on outside of the league. So it's important to just keep take every game as it comes. And obviously the next one's probably the biggest of the season.
Chelsea is the next game. You avoid defeat and you claim the title against your closest rivals. How sweet would that be?
I think that's probably, you couldn't have asked for a better setting, really. We're at home in our stadium that we love to be, playing against the team that pipped us to the post last year, and or who are a great team as well, so I can expect a good game of football from both sides. And, you know, if we win it there and get to lift it in front of our home crowd, that'll be it'll be really good.
Little break now for you, though. You go away with England, you've got Estonia on Thursday, then you travel to Belgium. I know that you've qualified already, but how much are you looking forward to those ones?
Yeah, really looking forward to it. I think, you know, we've qualified, obviously, but we want to top the group, and we want to start, you know, getting into our identity of how we're going to play for the Euros. And these are just another test of how we can match ourselves up against teams for the competition next year.
So that was Lucy Bronze. JJ, you mentioned the Chelsea game. 3-0 winners at Reading. Persistence is key. They are not giving up. I know that Emma Hayes will not let that team in any way falter or show any sign of giving up. Good win for them again.
Yeah, good win. They left it a bit late, yeah. Two goals in stoppage time, second half stoppage time, but still quite good. You know, again, you have to credit Reading to an extent this season. Obviously, you know, last year they were the darlings of the second division, Fran Kirby, you know, doing everything possible to get that team to where they are now. And then, of course, you know, she gets transferred to Chelsea, and then Reading has to basically restart from scratch all over again. So, you know, credit to them for fighting. I think they gave a decent account of themselves. But Chelsea, as I said, they're motivated. They have to play. You kind of the phrase here in America saying that, you know, 3 or 4 weeks left in the season and you know that your back's against the wall, you have to play like every game is a playoff game. You have to play every game like it's your last game of the season. And I think over the past few matches, Chelsea have, you know, really kind of done that. And they're going to do that, have to do that in the Champions League as well, because, you know, it's not like they have an easy test coming ahead. They've got Wolfsburg.
Yeah, they do have to play Wolfsburg, and that's obviously going to be a tough one. We'll wrap out there, mate, because obviously there's only two games in the WSL, but we'll be covering the conclusion of the league over the coming weeks. The Continental Cup final, of course, comes up at the beginning of October, and we will, of course, look at the WSL 2 because of the time limitations of this show. We can't always focus in on that league, but it is very, very exciting in the push for promotion. But we move on, and joining me on the line from out in Germany is our correspondent for the Frauen Bundesliga, Jasmina Schweimler. Jasmina, how are you?
Trying to cope with the heat, but other than that, I'm doing just fine.
Oh, I've just been saying to JJ how much I love the heat. Bring it on. Bring on more heat. I want it. I would happily have a barbecue on Christmas Day, given the opportunity. But we're not talking about the weather. We're talking about the Frauen Bundesliga. And there have been some big fixtures in round two. To be in a Potsdam over Frankfurt was probably the biggest result of the weekend. Tell me about that one.
Oh, so surprising to me, to be honest. But then again, Frankfurt had quite a disadvantage with players like Mandy Isacker and Desiree Schumann being out with injuries. And they faced a very confident and strong Potsdam side. 3 minutes, first goal for Potsdam, and then they dominated the game. And Tabia Kemme and Svenja Hood scored goals within 2 minutes in the last half of the game. So, yeah, good for Potsdam. Very nice to see that they're back on the victory road.
Yeah, good 3-0 win for them. And again, good result for Wolfsburg. They are, well, they make up for the disappointing result that they had on the opening day, don't they?
Well, you know that I'm a big critic, and I wasn't too happy with the game. I thought they played very slow and not creative, but the goals made up for it. Definitely nice to look at. Nice backheel goal by Anja Mittag. Such a nice way for her to kick things off by Wolfsburg. And then my personal favorite player, Ramona Bachmann, with a nice shot and goal. Yeah, that was pretty nice to see. I was very happy that I was there again.
And I know that you wanted to talk about, now I've been saying SC Sand for I don't know how long. You tell me it's SC Sond. SC Sond had a good win against Borussia. We say Borussia Mönchengladbach. You say it very differently.
Yeah, it's actually Borussia Mönchengladbach and SC Sand. Very German, but I forgive you.
I'm glad you forgive me. I couldn't live with myself if you didn't. But no, good result, you said, for Mönchengladbach, because after an 8-0 loss to Frankfurt last week, they were a bit more respectable this week.
Yeah, like I said, just imagine being a young player and you play your first game in the Bundesliga and then you get smashed 8-0 by such a top team. But personally, I'm just very happy to see that Gladbach can bounce back and can challenge the big teams. I think Sand have a very competitive team, so that's a good result for them and they can take a lot of positives from that.
And people will be interested to know how Bayern Munich got on, seeing as they're the champions. Another win for them?
Yeah, they won against Jena. Jena are also very strong. I believe that they can play a big role, and it took Bayern 69 minutes to score, and I think that says a lot about Jena as well. Good defending, took Bayern a long time to score, so I'm not very sure if they can be happy with that, but, you know, 3 points are 3 points.
Well, short roundup from you today, because we do have a packed show, but obviously we're only in the second week. Jasmina, we'll have you on again, obviously, if you want a bit more detail. Jasmina is a writer for Our Game magazine now, so log on to their website and you can read some of her pieces on there. Jasmina, thanks for joining me.
No problem.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So thanks there to Jasmina and her update on the Frauen Bundesliga. JJ, NWSL, we now know 3 of the 4 teams that will be competing in the end of season playoffs. Washington and Portland Thorns have cemented home ties. Chicago Red Stars are in there as well. It's going down to the wire. 1 game left.
Yeah, 1 game. I mean, how about a jam-packed weekend that we had, right? We had 10 matches this week. And if you go back, including to this past weekend as well, so that would be the 3rd and 4th of September, you've had 15 matches across the span of, my math's never really good, but 8 days. Lots of things have kind of developed here, but one of the things that I was hoping that we would still have something to play left in the final week of the season, and here we are. Western New York have not locked it down yet. A draw away to Washington on September the 3rd. A draw away to Boston, which I'm pretty sure not many people would have seen that one happening. In fact, Western New York had to fight just to get a point out of that match, scoring in the dying embers. And then they got a bit, they came back again against Portland. They're getting throttled early. They scored a couple late ones to make it interesting. But here they are right now. You and I kind of wondered. That team was playing so many matches at home over a consecutive amount of time, and they had to finish with four or five away from Rhino Stadium. Now they know that if they do make the playoffs, they're going to have to play away. Form is not really fitting them at the moment. And as you all know, for any sort of sport that has a postseason to the regular season, you need to be peaking at about this time to be successful. And I'm afraid they might have just left a few too many points on the table here.
Well, they have to go to Boston on the last weekend of the season again. They obviously drew when the teams met last week. I guess if you want to claim a playoff place and you need to get 3 points, I hate to say it, but Boston is probably the club that you want to be playing against.
Then they should have done it a week ago. They could have put this to bed quite early because Chicago then would have had the tiebreaker over Seattle. Then we wouldn't have had really anything to go for in this last week. So, I wouldn't be overly surprised, especially how the way that Boston's actually finishing out the season. Give credit, as you backed Matt Beard saying that no doubt, they're not going to lay down for the rest of the season. They're going to push forward. They're going to try and have themselves a good second half of the season. I think they have. They've played better. Not good, not great, but better. They're going to relish an opportunity to yet again play spoiler here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I meant no disrespect when I say you'd want to be playing Boston, but I think any team would want to be playing the team at the bottom of the league. But you're absolutely right. Boston have been much better since the Olympics, without a doubt, and have got gradually better as the season's gone on. It's dipped a little bit in the last few couple of weeks, but credit where credit's due. They have picked up. I mean, you look at it now, as I said, we know Washington Spirit at home, Portland Thorns at home, those two in particular on home soil, they've been very, very strong, haven't they? And it's going to take a really good performance from the Chicago Red Stars. We don't know where they're going yet. And from the team that finishes fourth to overcome those two sides.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just counting up the amount of wins that Washington have at the Soccerplex, and it far surpasses the numbers that they have lost at home. I think they got one win, two, three, four, five, six, seven home wins, one home loss, and two draws. That's pretty good. And when you look at Portland, it's always been kind of that stigma, right, where Portland has drawn the best crowds in the 4 years of that league and probably one of the best for in all of women's soccer. But for 3 years, they never fully capitalized on it until this year. Or again, I think they're 7-1-1 or 8-1-1 at home. That's incredible. Now both of them are going to have, the opportunity again to host that semifinal. I'll be curious to see how the teams go about in their final week, because remember the shield for the community shield for the highest finishing team in the regular season, or I should say supporter shield for the highest ranking team in the regular season. That's still very much up for grabs. The Spirit have to go to Chicago, who that could then be a matchup we're going to see a week later in the semifinals, because if Chicago wins and Portland gets a result, then Washington's going to host Chicago. So that'll be quite interesting to see. In Portland, that's no gimme on the road to Houston to wrap up the season. My apologies. For Portland, they're playing Sky Blue on the road, and that's no gimme. Sky Blue, I think it's very fair to say that they have surpassed all of our odds this season, and they have a chance to finish top five, which I don't think anyone outside of the players in that locker room, coaching staff and front office had them penned for.
I've already said it. I had Sky Blue finishing bottom of the league, and I have massive red face at the moment. They have been superb. I've really enjoyed watching Sky Blue this year. I've got it massively wrong. As I did with most of the teams, if you want me to be honest, I think this season's been brilliant. I'm sad that we're only a few weeks away from it coming to a close, as I am with the WSL, of course. But Houston Dash, another positive result for them, another goal for Keely Ojai. We asked the question on the last show, should she be in the US Women's National Team squad? I say yes. Has your opinion changed on what you said last time?
No, not at all. I knew, I think it was, you know, one of the worst kept secrets out there, that these two upcoming US matches were going to be for the players that were on the Olympic team and the alternates, obviously, you know, as we know, and you're going to talk about this with Heather O'Reilly herself, that Thursday night's going to be her last match. So I think, you know, we kind of knew that this was going to happen, be how it is. The U.S. will have two more friendlies before the year's over. Keely Ojai, if she is not on one of those teams, or on that team, then I think there's going to be needed somebody to be looked at, because you can't keep the best striker in the league on current form right now off of that team, because you can pit her up against some of the other forwards on that roster right now, and I'd give, at this time, Ojai the hand, because you always go with the hot hand, right?
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. And I, for one, think she's been really good. She's grabbed the team by the scruff of the neck in terms of leading them and having a real hot streak. I mean, you think about that period that Houston went without scoring. What was it, six games, something like that? Six straight games?
1-0 results.
Yeah. Yeah, so they weren't getting battered, but they just couldn't find the net. And if they, you imagine if Ojai or Rachel Daly or Janine Becky had the form that they've had towards the end of the season early on, they would be a playoff team without a doubt. And they are the team for me that you have to watch next year. I know a lot of us thought that they might be that team this year, but I think if Randy Waldrum is smart in the draft, adds a few pieces here and there, there's no major tournament for players to go away, so they will have the likes of Morgan Bryan and Carly Lloyd available for all of the season next year, minus any internationals that the US decide to arrange. They're the team to watch next year for me, and I think they've massively improved over the course of the season. I mean, one thing we haven't mentioned, and they got a very good win over the weekend, was the Seattle Reign. We're not used to seeing them in this position going into the last game against Houston, funnily enough, to try and get 3 points that would take them into the playoffs, but only if the Western New York Flash slip up at Boston. Where's your money going? Who do you think could be the team that gets that, that grabs that last place?
As I said, Western New York had their chance. You know, they could have locked this up a week ago. We wouldn't be talking about this. They have not finished well. Even it is against Boston on the road, I think they walk out of Boston with a point to get that final spot. I don't think they do it convincingly enough, and unfortunately it's going to go down to that head-to-head tiebreaker. And I want to put this out there, Kieran. I said all the way back in June when we had a talk about that, I think we could say, debacle at Frontier Field, where they played that game on the tiniest pitch imaginable. I think 7-a-side would be more suited for that. And that's going to be a match that has big meanings in how the season goes, right? Western New York wins that match. They draw the next week out in Seattle. The first tiebreaker in settling any ties is head-to-head. So here's Western New York. They're going to use that, and they're going to just, and I mean just, get into the playoffs, because I think Seattle, despite how it ends up in Boston, they're going to go out, they're going to get 3 points, it's going to finish on level pegging, and we're going to have a lot of questions to be asked in the offseason.
So you don't think that it's geared up for a nice farewell for Keelan Winters, obviously, last week?
No, I'm not saying that my heart is there. My heart wants to see that match. My heart wants to see Seattle win it, because I think that's what I put down as my pre-prediction, but here we are. So, I want to see. And here's the funny thing also. It's a national TV game as well, the last match of the season on a Sunday the 25th between Houston and the Reign. So wouldn't that be great TV drama, knowing that exactly if, if Seattle wins their match, then they get into the playoffs. That'd be phenomenal stuff. That's actually where the league can go ahead and properly build this match as a winner-go-home situation.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, as we discussed on the last show, some of the drama has been taken out of it by the fact that Seattle will know one way or the other what they need to do on that Sunday, because the Breakers play the Western New York Flash the night before, don't they? So if the Flash win, doesn't matter what happens in Houston. If the Flash draw or lose, then it's all for Seattle to play for, and they have that upper hand of knowing exactly what they have to do. It's a disadvantage for Western New York, if anything.
Yeah, it is. But I guess, you know, you have to play the role of rabbit here. You have to jump out and get yourself out enough. But, you know, again, I'm very concerned that Western New York has... they shouldn't have put themselves in this position. And now they, you know, the great story that they have been this year, Kieran, that could go for naught. One bad slip, one moment of magic for Boston, that could be all the difference. Really could. And that's the sport for you, right? You know, the sport is one of those things where you can be great for 90 minutes and you lose 1-0. So, you know, it's all for the taking here.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, exciting, definitely. We've got to wait a little while for those fixtures because, as we've mentioned, the US Women's National Team have a couple of fixtures, one of which is upcoming this Thursday against Thailand, and it will be Heather O'Reilly's last game for the national team. 230 caps, number of goals along the way, 14 years in that setup, and I was really fortunate and very lucky to have some time on the phone with Heather this week to talk about that career, to talk about some of the highlights, and to talk about the time that Julie Foudy stitched her up when she was a rookie. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview with Heyo Heather O'Reilly. Okay, so for this edition of Women's Soccer Zone, I am really, really pleased to be joined by a term that is overused too often, a legend of the women's game, not just in the US, but on a global scale. I'm joined by Heather O'Reilly, better known as Heyo, joining me from Kansas City before she heads out to Columbus for this week's game against Thailand. Heather, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to have players like yourself. Now, obviously, we are speaking to you for very clear reasons. Earlier this month, you announced that you were going to be retiring from international football after over 200 caps for the United States spanning 14 years. I guess my first question, and it's probably one you've had to answer a lot, so I apologize. Why now, and how much did you have to think about your decision?
I think, it, you know, in reflection of my career, I've been on the team for 15 years. That's nearly half my life. It's been an amazing ride. I think with this new cycle coming up, it just felt like the right time for me. I think I'm very proud of my shift that I've put in with the U.S. Women's National Team. I mean, obviously the titles of three Olympic gold medals and winning the World Cup last year are certainly, you know, the highlights in terms of team achievements. But I'm proud of all the in-between steps along the way. And, it sat on my heart for a while, and it just seemed like, you know, the right time to leave the national team as a player. And I will, you know, forever and for my whole life be a supporter of the program, and I love this game a lot, and I'm certainly looking forward to helping the sport grow in a number of different ways. I will look back on my 15 years fondly, and it was a big part of my life, so of course it's mixed emotions leading up to this game in Columbus.
I mean, you made your debut, as you say, at a very young age back in 2002 as a 17-year-old. If you were giving advice to the 17-year-old Heather O'Reilly, knowing what you know now, what would it have been back then?
Strap in. Strap in. It's going to be an amazing ride. That's what I would say. Oh, I guess I would just say to enjoy it, to be yourself, you know. I think that I'm proud of, you know, how I was able to sort of uniquely impact the national team. I'm proud of the way that I always prepared to be the best that I could be, the best teammate that I can be. I sort of valued my individual qualities. And, you know, I was part of a lot of winning teams, and I'm very, very proud of that. So, yeah, I think that I would just tell my young self, you know, to take a breath, just be yourself, and go for it every single day. And I would wish her luck.
Is that kind of maybe the advice that you gave to Mallory Pugh when she came into the setup? She was a 17-year-old, a lot of hype, a lot of attention on her when she came into the program. How much did you kind of pass on from your experiences when you were her age?
Yeah, I've had a few talks with Mallory. You know, she is already wise beyond her years. So, of course, you know, I think that I can help guide her a little bit, but she seems to really have a great head on her shoulders, which is wonderful to see. And I think the most important part of sort of being thrust in that position is just realizing that, you know, success kind of comes as a byproduct. You can't focus on winning. You can't focus on success. You can't focus on goals. You can't focus on assists. Those are byproducts of, you know, what you sort of do every single day in your training mentality, in your mental preparation, and the way that you live your life every single day. I think if you focus on doing those things well, all those periphery things happen as a byproduct of that. So that's sort of what I've told now, is just to really focus on the process. I think if, you know, any young player focuses on getting better every single day, never being satisfied with their game. I played for Anthon Dorrance at University of North Carolina, and he has a philosophy of a never-ending ascension, and that goes for life and football. And I think that if you focus on continuing to add layers to yourself, layers to your game, you know, you'll be in a good place. And the U.S. team is always hungry to improve, always hungry. Strong desire to win, but a strong desire to improve. And I think that focusing on the improvement is what's led the program to a lot of success through the years.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And you mentioned Anthon Dorrance there. He's had a huge, huge impact on so many players across the years that he's been involved in North Carolina. But even before you went to North Carolina to play under Anthon Dorrance, you had already made your debut for the U.S. Women's National Team. You were 17 years old. You went into a team that included the likes of Mia Hamm, the likes of Christine Lilly. What was it like walking into that team as a 17-year-old, much like Mal Pugh will have done, surrounded by an equally successful team now, a World Cup winning team? You went into a team that had won a World Cup a few years previously. What was it like as a 17-year-old walking into a locker room with those names?
Oh, I mean, I was completely awestruck. I definitely got the phone call from April Heinrichs, and I totally thought it was, like, either a prank from a friend or, you know, just some kind of joke, I guess. And, you know, when I first got called in, like, I went to the training camp. I mean, I joke about it now. I remember, you know, going to the airport, and my mom and dad dropped me off, and I didn't even have a credit card yet to check my bag in, you know, at the airport, and I was just a kid. And I remember Christine Lilly being there and Julie Foudy being there and just, you know, completely being awestruck. I thought that it felt like one of those contests that you win, kind of like in a cereal box or something, like, hey, come train with the U.S. national team for a day. That's what it felt like to me. I didn't really feel like I belonged yet, you know. I certainly didn't know why, you know, April Heinrichs saw what she saw, but, you know, I believed in myself. I believed that I could, you know, make an impact. In those early days, I was certainly awestruck.
When did you feel like you belonged?
Whenever the players would call for the ball, I would just give them the ball because I wanted them to like me. I wanted to belong. So it certainly took a while for me to gain that self-belief that I was there for a reason. I was there because the coach thought that, you know, I could do things that nobody else could could do.
When did you feel like you belonged, Heather?
I would definitely say that it took me the first tournament there at the Algarve Cup in 2002. You know, coming home from that and then sort of getting invited to my next set of games, I think that I got a little bit more in the groove. It always helps to get your first goal with the national team. I remember scoring that first goal in North Carolina, which was special. And yeah, that just a consistent confidence that the coach had in me to continue to give me opportunities in games. I think my confidence just continued to grow and grow. And then, you know, it probably went into 2004, which was when I made the Olympic team. It was probably the last roster spot chosen for that team. And just knowing that I fought and clawed my way through that training and tryout preparation period and truly put myself in the position of being the top 18 players in the country, I felt it. I felt like I should be there and that I could help the team win. And I was so proud to make that roster. I was so proud to be able to score a goal in those Olympic Games and to help us on to the final, which we were able to win and send a bunch of legends out as Olympic champions.
Yeah, of course, for anyone that doesn't know, Heather's referring to the 2004 Olympic Games in Athens. You scored, as you say, in the semi-final and went on to beat Brazil in the final. You also, you talk about feeling a part of things and feeling like you belonged there. You inherited Mia Hamm's number 9 shirt. Now, what pressures did that come with? Because we know Mia Hamm's reputation. We know one of the biggest legends in the game ever. To be handed that number 9 shirt, that must have been, I guess, an honor, but also came with different pressures.
Of course, when Mia was retiring, somebody at U.S. Soccer asked if I would, you know, like to take that number. And for me, it was a no-brainer. I mean, what an honor. Certainly, I knew early on that, you know, I was never going to be Mia Hamm because I'm Heather O'Reilly. I'm something completely different. I knew that it came with a responsibility of work ethic and class and leadership and doing the right things or trying to do things the right way. And hopefully I succeed in that. And a couple days ago, Mia tweeted me a nice message on Twitter called Mia Legend, and I have to admit I did chuckle a little bit at the irony of that, and I decided in that moment that I could sleep well at night.
I mean, there was a lot of messages. When you see a player with your reputation and your stature, we've seen it in the past, players who've announced international retirements. Kelly Smith is a high-profile one over here in England. When you see the messages that you get from the likes of Mia Hamm, and not just players in America, but from abroad as well, how does that make you feel when you hear the nice things that are said about you?
I mean, incredibly proud. I think that everybody knows that it's not always smooth sailing as a professional athlete. It's not always smooth sailing being on a women's national team. You know, we have a lot more good days than bad, that's for sure, but, you know, it's sometimes tough, and you know, we're incredibly proud of what we've accomplished, and I'm incredibly proud of what I've been able to accomplish on the team for the last 15 years. So, to be sort of recognized for your achievements and recognized by teammates especially, and especially a lot of fans that, you know, that tell us that we've inspired them to do bigger things outside sport, you know, it's really sort of overwhelming to hear some stories of people overcoming some obstacles in their life because they were somewhat inspired by watching us on the field. I mean, that's absolutely incredible. If I was able to one life, I mean, that's a massive achievement. So, yeah, I was just completely overwhelmed by the love and support that I felt. You know, I'm very proud, and surely it will be an emotional week. Spending some time with teammates and hearing from fans and spending time with my family.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute for sure. I mean, who you're talking about, people who've been inspired by watching you guys on the field. Who inspired you? Who inspired you during your career?
you know, we've already spoke of the generation before me, and, you know, I was a 99 Women's World Cup kid. I was at the 99 Women's World Cup in New Jersey seeing Mia Hamm score and seeing the U.S. national team go on to win the Women's World Cup. So in a very, you know, tangible way, that's who I looked up to. I was a 14-year-old kid at that stadium, and I was screaming for the team, just like I, you know, see fans scream for us. So, you know, I did have posters of Mia on my wall and, you know, the national team on my wall. So they were my heroes. They were my idols. I guess in a closer capacity, I have three older brothers, and they were my heroes in that I always tried to hang with them. You know, they were a bit older than me, so for a long, long time, there's no way that I could hang with them. But eventually, I kind of got there, and I loved the feeling of being able to compete with my brothers. I loved the pride that I could sense from them when I was starting to get to the point where I could outrun or outplay their friends on the basketball court or on the soccer field, and I gained a lot of confidence from that, a lot of self-esteem from that, and certainly making my family proud was always a reason for me doing what I did.
Now, you mentioned earlier on, you've won an awful lot. You've won gold medals in Olympics, you've won a World Cup, you've also won a lot at club level as well, an NWSL Championship. You won the very first WPS with Sky Blue, which we won't talk about too much because obviously this is international retirement. You're still carrying on in your club career, so I don't want to make out that you're giving up football altogether. But when you look back on an international career that spans so long, can you pick out a highlight? Is there something that stands out for you? For me, my Heather O'Reilly highlight wasn't actually winning a medal. It was actually the part that you played in that phenomenal 4-3 win that you had over Canada in the 2012 Olympics, because that game for me was one of the best games I've ever seen. And for you to play the part and play the ball that got the winning goal in extra time was a huge play and a huge moment going into that game.
You know what? I would have to agree with you. That's definitely that's one of my favorite moments as well. You know, I'm blessed to be able to say that I've had a lot of wonderful moments to choose from on the national team, but that certainly goes down as one of my favorite moments. First of all, it was at Old Trafford, which, as a Man U fan, that was...
Oh, Heather, you don't support Man United. You don't support Man United.
Yeah, come on now.
Well, we're gonna fall out because you're playing my team Watford on Sunday, so
we're gonna be out for blood in that game.
You go after the derby, absolutely. But sorry, yeah. Carry on.
No, but it was such a thrill for us to be able to play at some of these historic venues at the 2012 Olympics. I remember Tobin Heath and I were sort of doing like the equivalent of snow angels down on the field at Old Trafford. You know, just enjoying being in that atmosphere the day before our match when we had a walkthrough on the field and just sort of soaking it up. And, you know, it was so special for us. And for me in that game, I came off the bench. I think, in the second overtime or maybe first overtime period of that game, which was already, you know, one of the most emotional matches that I've been part of. I mean, Sinclair scores, we score. Sinclair scores, we score. Sinclair scores, we score. I mean, it was insane, and you know, an incredibly emotional match, a really exciting soccer match. And then to go in, you know, to the game in extra time and try to help the team on, it's a big task. And I remember being on the sideline, just trying to keep my bearings about me, keep my head clear and my body calm, so I was able to execute what I needed to do when I went out on the field. And I mean, I remember the play so clearly. Abby gets it in the middle of the field, plays a very heavy pass for me to have to run onto on the
emphasizing the heavy there, Heather. Emphasizing the heavy.
It was, you put a lot on the pass, and I remember having to sort of sprint to it, get my hips around it, and I was able to serve, you know, the great ball in the box that Alex Morgan was able to head home. And I think that I'm incredibly proud of that for a number of reasons. First of all, you know, obviously coming off the bench in a game and being able to execute, I think, is an art. And I think it's something that people don't recognize it as being so crucial sometimes in games. So for me to be able to do that, I was very proud of that. Secondly, I mean, that is something that we had trained. You know, I took a lot of pride in my wing play and my crossing ability, especially with having a player like Abby Wambach on your team, who's one of the best in the air. I mean, for years that became my craft. I, you know, tried to be the best server of the ball that I can be, and that was hours and hours and hours on the training pitch, and to see it sort of come together in that very important moment was incredible. And then obviously we went on to win the gold medal. So yeah, that's a play that, you know, a lot of times people know that Alex scored. They don't necessarily remember that I assisted, but that's okay, because I know in my heart that that was a massive play, and that I'm super proud of, to be able to contribute to the team and the team's history in that way.
Maybe we remember it a little bit over here, because obviously it was the Olympics that was over in here in England, so maybe we remember it a little bit better, I don't know. But you mentioned there the emphasis that you have on wanting to be a good wing player and being the best server of the ball. One of the things that always comes out in the, not necessarily in the media, but is quite public, is your athleticism and the fact that you are known to be one of the fittest players on the team. I think Dawn Scott, who obviously used to be the sports scientist for England, is obviously now your sports scientist over there. I know you work very closely with her, as do all the players. How much do you work on that? How, you know, the American players are known for being physically fit, but for a player to be recognised as one of, if not the fittest player on the team, how much do you work on that, or is that natural athleticism?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest. My dad was a world-class track athlete in his day. He went to Villanova University in the 70s, and so in that capacity, I think that I do have some advantages, but I've also worked very, very hard through the years. I've taken a lot of pride in my fitness. I watched this movie called Without Limits, which is about Steve Prefontaine, a famous track athlete in the U.S., and I watched this movie when I was, like, in seventh grade or something like that, and it really affected me, because he left it out there. Like, he maybe didn't pace himself the best way that he should have, but he wanted to test his limits. He wanted to test the limits of his heart, and I think that story sort of always, you know, led me to play the way that I did, and I definitely have spent many days, you know, out on the training field and just, you know, completely emptying my tank and finding new layers of fitness in me, because I want to be able to go for 120 minutes for the team if they need me to. So it's definitely something that I think that I had some advantages of in terms of my build and my physical ability, but it's also something that I took a lot of pride in, and that gave me a lot of confidence through the years, knowing that for me it was very much something that I could control. You know, if I put the work in and I, you know, put the grind in, and it's not always a comfortable feeling, I think that I've gotten comfortable being uncomfortable in that capacity. But I knew that if I, you know, put the work in and dedicated myself to it, that I had, that was something that I had in my back pocket, and then that's something that I know that coaches and teammates appreciate when you can go up and down all day for the team.
Okay. Well, I've taken a lot of your time. We'll try and have a few more, and then I'm going to leave you to enjoy the rest of your day. But we should talk about the game coming up this week against Thailand. It will be your last international for the US Women's National Team. What's going through your mind in the days leading up to that? We're recording this 3 days before the game. What's in your mind? How much are you looking forward to it? How difficult do you think it's going to be turning out for the last time?
I think it's going to be very emotional. I mean, you know, this has been half my life, 15 years. You know, there's certainly more to my life than just the national team. You know, happily married, have a wonderful family. I know that I have a lot of wonderful things to look forward to, but at the end of the day, this has been, you know, such a massive chapter in my book so far. So certainly going to be emotional. I love this sport, and I love suiting up for this country. So it's going to be, you know, bittersweet. I think that I'm going to really enjoy spending time with my teammates and my coaches, and reflecting on 15 years in the uniform. It's gonna be really cool. My family will be there, who have been there every step of the way. It's gonna be a really neat couple of days. I'm really looking forward to it. I guess it's kind of hard to anticipate how I'm gonna feel at this point, but knowing me, I wear my heart on my sleeve, so I'm sure everybody will know how I'm feeling.
Yeah. I'm sure. And is it important, or how important is it that you guys have this opportunity to meet up so soon after the Olympics? I'm sure that for you guys, you were hugely disappointed after what went down in Rio. How important is it that you have the opportunity to meet up, get together, put things right, have a good performance against Thailand, and then build looking forward?
I think it's incredibly important. I think that when this team has been disappointed before in major tournaments, the bounce back and the story has always gotten greater. You know, I mean, when you think about losing in 03, then we won in 04, and, you know, we lost in 07, and then we won in 08, and then we lost in 11, and then we won in 2012. And, you know, now is sort of the first time that we'll have 3 years of time to think about that loss. And for me, I think that the rest of the world better watch out, because that's 3 years that this team is going to train harder and is going to find even another level of sophistication and in the game, and won't forget about that feeling in Rio, because it was tremendously disappointing. We're excited to get back together. Of course, we love playing on our national team. I mean, it's such an incredible honor to be brought up, and I think that these couple of games will be sort of closing a little bit of last year up, and then, you know, moving on to the future. And like I said, I'm incredibly proud to have been part of this team for 15 years, and certainly going to be cheering the team on every step of the way on their way to France 2019.
Well, last couple, we should remind people that you're not giving up the game altogether. You have committed to playing for FC Kansas City next year. How much did you have to think about your club career? You've been very committed to the NWSL. You've had a great career along with the Boston Breakers and obviously your current club, FC KC. Was there ever any doubt that you might carry on next year? Did you consider giving the game up altogether, or were you always committed to playing in the league next year?
Well, for me, I think that everybody's different. I think I kind of wanted to do one thing at a time. And, closing the chapter on my national team and my national team career was sort of one thing that it just felt like the right time. But I love this game a lot. I think that I still have a lot to offer on the pitch. I wanted to kind of take my time in making any decisions in club, because, like I said, I love this game a lot. I think that there's a lot after soccer, certainly, but I definitely don't want to hang the boots up before I'm ready. So I'm gonna take my time on that decision, but I don't know. I just love this game a lot. I know that I keep saying that, but my heart is full for this sport, and there's not many places that I'd rather be than on the field. So that's why I've sort of differentiated, I guess, between international soccer and club soccer, because you certainly don't have to be done with both. I want to be an ambassador for this game. I love this game, and I certainly want to help in any way that I can.
American players get asked a lot about playing in other countries. You've spent your whole career playing in the United States. Some of your teammates, Kristen Press being in one example, Whitney Engen, Megan Klingenberg, have all played in Europe. Now that you're not going to be representing the US after this week, any desires to come and play over here?
I would definitely keep an open mind to it. I'm certainly interested in all different capacities of playing club football. I think the NWSL is a wonderful club, but I'm certainly, keeping my options open because I think that I have spent a lot of time in the U.S. and you know, I want to be a true ambassador for this sport, and whether that's in television or in coaching or even in some nonprofit stuff that I'm very engaged with. I want to be the best ambassador that I can be, and I think in order to do that, I need to, you know, question sort of what stretches me and what challenges me, and I'm certainly open to the option of playing overseas. I think that's one thing, you know, that I haven't been able to do, and it's definitely a possibility.
Well, let's finish it up on a lighthearted note. Look back at US career. There's probably so many when you've got characters like Megan Rapinoe and others that have played alongside you over the years. Can you pick out any funny or amusing moments that have happened in a game or a training session that really stick out for you?
Oh, my gosh. There's too many. I'm just scanning my brain right now of the best moments possible. I mean, Heather Mitz was such a character on the team. She's known for being the prankster, and she pulled some very, very epic pranks on us through the years. I mean, my laughs with Pino and Abby Wambach are just so many. I can't even think. I guess maybe one thing that comes to mind is my first trip with the national team. I was late for breakfast one day because, you know, as we know, I was a teenager, and I needed sleep. And so I didn't think that anybody noticed that I missed breakfast completely. I just thought that I was in the clear. And then Julie Foudy, who's, you know, an unbelievable leader but also was a jokester herself, brought us in on the training pitch and huddled us up and told us that she had noticed, or the team had noticed, that there had been some players that were, you know, late for things and missing meals and et cetera. And to make up for that, the team had to get on the line and run some sprints. And so I'm in the back of that huddle, like, mortified and also kind of confused of how anybody noticed I wasn't there. And but I wanted to get on the line and just absolutely crush these sprints because it was my mistake and it was my first trip and I was embarrassed and didn't want to get in trouble. We got on the line. April Heinrich got to the end of the field and put her hand up and dropped her hand, and I just busted out of the gate, like, as fast as I could. And as we've talked about, you know, my speed and fitness is definitely attributes of mine. So I wanted to absolutely crush these sprints. And so I get about 50 yards out. I look to my left. I look to my right. I don't see anybody there, but I genuinely feel, being 17 years old, a little cocky, that I'm so far in front of everybody on the women's national team.
You carried on.
That I just can't see them in my peripherals, and I carry on. I'm just pounding down the field, and I get about 60 yards out before I realize that nobody's there running with me. I've just ran a complete full field sprint all by myself. They're on the end line, just keeled over, dying laughing that I went so far before noticing. And, it was just a little prank for them to tell me, you know, put their arm around me and say, Hey, rookie, like, we knew that you weren't at breakfast. Like, don't be late for things. Like, we care about you, but, you know, we have rules here. So that's one thing that sort of always stuck with me through the years. And I wish we had video of that to just see, you know, my face when I realized that nobody was there running with me. My disappointment that I actually wasn't that much faster than everybody.
I think they call that tough love, Heather.
Yeah. Absolutely.
An early learning curve,
I'm sure.
And I'm still
talking about it 15 years later. So
absolutely.
We can speak to the impact that that had on me.
Without a doubt. Well, look, it's been a genuine pleasure. I love interviewing players that have got so much to talk about and have had such illustrious careers, and you certainly are up there with the best of them. Really do wish you well for the game on Thursday. I'm sure it's going to be an emotional one, but remember to enjoy it because you've had a great career, and I'm sure that everyone will want to see you playing at your best and putting in one last performance for a team that I know you're very fond of.
I will do. I will enjoy it. Thanks for having me, and thanks for supporting the women's game.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, SheKicks Magazine. Subscribe at SheKicks.net for even more women's football.
So big thanks there to Heather. Really appreciate her time. Wish her well in the game on Thursday. And of course, must be reiterated, not giving up the game completely. She very much, as said in that interview, is committed to playing for FC Kansas City. next season. JJ, what I wanted to do very quickly as well, we always talk about the impact that players have. You and I spoke about Heather's retirement in the last show. I actually wanted to get some feedback from some of those that have played with her and against her. So I chucked a couple of messages out and I got a few back over the last 24 hours, one of which came from one of the players mentioned in that interview, Julie Foudy. What I asked the people that I messaged was sum up Heather O'Reilly in one sentence. So I got a few responses. One of them was from Julie Foudy, in which she said, "Heyo is about all the good in competing and being a teammate. She is committed, positive, classy, driven, and always eager to get better. It is why she is and will always be a giant in the game." I also got a response from Kate Margraff, who, of course, is a broadcaster now, but played in the US Women's National Team for a number of years. People may remember her better as Kate Sobrero. She said the following about Heyo. She said, "She has stick-tuitiveness to the team objective over her own, a relentless, underrated player as she got older, which is common as players age and someone new with different skills pops up." Now, the final quote that I got was from a good friend of mine and good friend of the show, Jess Fishlock. Now, the reason I asked Jess for a response was because it's interesting for me to hear how players match up and how they prepare to come up against someone like Heather O'Reilly. And Jess responded by saying, "Whenever you prepare for a game against Heyo, you know you're in for a tough ride. She never stops and is always dangerous. Mentally, she's a tough opponent for you." JJ, some pretty nice comments there from some people who've played with and against Heather O'Reilly. Is that again reinforcing the type of player that the US Women's National Team is losing?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, she's the consummate professional that, you know, anyone can strive to want to be. I mean, you know, there's always that sense of when she's going to work that she is going to work herself to her absolute limit and give everything that she always has. But at the end of the day, there's always going to be a smile on her face as well. And I think, you know, someone that can step back, take off the proverbial journalistic hat and watch as a fan, that's what I'm going to miss. You know, I'm going to miss, you know, kind of a little bit of the joyful bounce in there, but at the same time, you know, that grit and determination and always those ever-present runs to get to the end line on the right side and then delivering the killer ball or create the chance and finish it herself.
Yeah, absolutely. Legend, and as I said at the beginning of the interview, a term that is very much overused. Big thanks to you, mate, as always, for giving me your time to help me put this show together. And, of course, big thanks to Jasmina and to Heyo. If anyone would like to contact us, you can do. We are on Twitter on @WosoZone. Contact us via email on wosozone@gmail.com. And of course, listen to the show on iTunes and on audioboom.com/channel/wosozone. And as you may have seen on our Twitter account, I sincerely apologize for spamming in the early days of the competition opening. We have toned it down incredibly since. Women's Soccer Zone is entering the Football Blog Awards and is in the category for Best Podcast. We are appealing, we are asking politely if you would vote for us. Look at our Twitter account and you will see the details on how to vote. We want women's football represented at that awards. And as far as I'm aware, a women's football only outlet has never won an award at the Football Blogging Awards. We want to be the first for the women's football community as well as for ourselves. So please do vote for us. JJ, thanks, mate. I'll catch up with you soon.
Absolutely.
And thank you very much, listeners. We will catch up with you in a couple of weeks. Until then, take care and bye-bye.